You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Wussman. And today we're going to delve into a topic that we haven't covered before, and that's relationships with adult children as we get older. As we get older, so do our kids. They become teenagers, they become adults, they're off on their own, and a lot of things can change. We're joined today by Tina Gilbertson, who's the author of a new book, Reconnecting with Your Estranged Adult Child. Tina Gilbertson is a psychotherapist who specializes in supporting parents of estranged adult children, and she's the founder of the Reconnection Club, an essential online resource for parents of estranged adult children. As an expert on relationships and communication, she's been featured in dozens of media outlets, including Forbes, The Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, Psychology Today, and Fast Company. Tina holds a master's degree in counseling psychology, is licensed as an LPC in Colorado and Oregon, and is also a board-certified telemental health provider, offering online therapy to clients in both states. Though her office is currently in Denver, she offers training and consulting all over the world. Tina, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
So what led you to focus on this topic in your work and to write a book about it?
As a therapist in private practice, I had clients coming in, multiple clients who would tell me that they weren't happy with their parents and they weren't having a relationship and they weren't calling them and they were just not wanting contact. And although, of course, I didn't meet their parents, I thought, well, they must be frantic about this, trying to figure out what's going on. And when I talked to my clients about this, they would say things like, well, my parents wouldn't understand, or I've tried to talk to them, but they just don't get it. And it just sounded like a terrible situation. And at the same time, I happened to write a blog post on my website called What to Do If Someone Won't Talk to You. And the people I heard most from, the reader comments I got the most were from, guess who? Parents whose adult children were not talking to them. And so I put two and two together and realized this is a problem that's not really rare, but that's going on out there and we're not really talking about it. So I took the information that I was getting from my clients who were talking about their parents, and I started writing articles just for parents, sharing some of the issues that were coming up, this was all anonymous and kind of generalized, but sharing general information about what are the issues for these adult children? What are they sharing with me that their parents really need to know in order to repair these relationships? And so those little articles and stuff I wrote on the internet turned into a 100-page guide, which I put up on my website, and that was there for a number of years. And, you know, by the time I started hearing from people in other countries saying, do you have this in my language? I thought, this probably needs to be a book. And so I took that guide and I turned it into my Reconnecting with Your Estranged Adult Child book. And there it is. That was the journey. So it was very much almost an accidental thing that I fell into, where I just saw that this was happening, that there was a need, and I wanted to help families reunite any way that I could.
And Tina, what does the research show about how often this happens, and is it on the rise?
That is an interesting question. The second part of it, is it on the rise, is something I would say we really don't know, because we don't have any real data from even 25 years ago. I know it's not a new phenomenon. I mean, the Bible has a couple of references to parent-child estrangement, so it's definitely not new. And in fact, what I found out that I hadn't really thought about when I started is my own grandmother estranged herself from her parents to the extent that my mom grew up without knowing her grandparents on that side of the family. So we know that it's not new. And this was, I don't know, 80 years ago or something. And whether it's on the rise, well, what we can probably say is that talking about it is on the rise. That's what's happening more and more with the advent of the internet and social media and people's ability to go online and find other people. I think it's a subject that has come to light, but is estrangement itself on the rise? Don't know. As more data comes in, perhaps we'll know over time whether it's growing. But we have a little bit of research. It's still in its infancy. But I would say from the research that we do have, conservatively, maybe one out of 10 parents has at least one adult child that they have a troubled relationship with. Sometimes it's more than one. Sometimes they have three children and they're estranged from all three. But that's maybe one out of 10 parents, as best we know right now.
So what causes relationships with adult children to fracture and become estranged?
That is such a big question because there are so many factors. I think a couple that it might come down to, and one that's really important that I feel like I need to put out there is a stage of life in the life of a young adult where they just simply naturally need more space to go and do their individual thing. And when a family has been very, very close, this need for individuation, for separation, for autonomy and distance can be shocking and concerning. But it is, to a great extent, it's a natural development in the life of most adults. And I think when it becomes problematic and turns into a real painful estrangement is when it's not really well understood by the family. Like, what's going on? Why is our daughter not returning our texts? Or why is our son not wanting to come home for the holidays? I think that the phase of development that a young adult or a recently launched adult of any age is in is an overlooked cause very often of what feels like a frightening estrangement. But apart from that, and it's complex because that can also be a part of estrangements that are motivated by other things as well. If you look at that family that was always very, very close, the adult child who is growing up and wanting to get maybe his own place or do his own thing might start to feel, from his point of view, stifled or smothered, or, you know, the closeness no longer feels good. And the family may have no idea. They may say, what's the problem? We've always been close. You know, why doesn't he want to spend as much time with us? Sure, he needs his independence, but why can't he do that while returning our texts? So there's that piece as well. But feeling smothered is possible, or also feeling criticized or not supported or not understood by parents who, again, may have no idea that their attempts to support their child or the way they talk in the family, these things are being interpreted as criticism or a lack of support, or the child may feel invisible. There's just a million ways in which people can miss each other in communication. And so the relationship may not feel as good to the adult child as it feels to the parent. And it can truly be a shock when that child steps away from the relationship, because the parent oftentimes has no idea that this is going on. Other times the parent may realize, oh, this relationship is kind of strained, it's troubled, it's hard, it's volatile. And the parent feels that too. They feel challenged by the relationship, but it doesn't occur to them that estrangement is an option because we're family, right? So in all the ways that relationships, any kind of relationships, can go off the rails, the parent-child relationship can also go off the rails in those same ways, and also because of the developmental needs of the child that may not be well understood on either side.
Tina, before the symptoms actually show itself, and before this becomes a problem in a family with adult children, Are there, as teenagers grow up in a family, are there warning signs or are there things that point to, ooh, this could be leading to a problem that people might be able to see before this manifests itself? Do you have a perspective on that?
That's a great question. And there is research to indicate that a troubled, conflicted, volatile relationship with your child when the child is a teenager is a risk factor for estrangement in adulthood. So it may be wise, rather than saying, he's just going through, he's 16, of course he's angry or whatever, and hoping that it blows over when he gets older, it may be really important to try to work through that at that time when you still have the ability to say, we are going to family counseling and you're coming too. Because you do want to have a foundation of the healthiest communication that you can before your child leaves home, and then you no longer have as much control over the landscape and what happens between you.
What are the different types of estrangement that you see?
Well, I classify estrangement into three categories, although these can overlap and it's not that neat and tidy like a lot of things in life. But the kind of cutoff that my grandmother apparently engaged in, that is one type of estrangement that is pretty extreme. And I think we don't see as much of it nowadays. I'm talking about lifelong, total cutoff, no contact, the end. I think that it's harder, fortunately, in this day and age, to disappear on people and to just never be seen again and for there to be no way to contact you. It's just, it's harder to have that kind of total cutoff. And I don't really see very much of that at all. The other two types are much more common. One is a type of estrangement that people are not sure if they're estranged. They'll ask me, are we estranged if, and this is, I call it emotional estrangement, where the distance isn't physical necessarily, and the parent may have regular contact with the child, but emotionally there's a distance. It feels like they're strangers. Instead of warm and close, they feel like they're walking on eggshells, like there's a coldness or a stranger kind of quality. And that's a very painful kind of estrangement in a different way from having no access to your child. In the emotional estrangement case, your child is right in front of you, but you don't feel connected. And that may be something that happens after an actual estrangement, after a logistical estrangement, or it may be something that develops over time, or it may be something where, you were never as close as you wanted to be. So that's the second type, and I call it emotional estrangement. The third type is the one that I think is probably the most common. It shows up a lot in the research, and there are different names for it. I call it on-again, off-again estrangement. It's also known as cyclical or periodic estrangement. And I think the labels give you a picture of what that is. Sometimes we're talking, things are okay, we're in contact. And then other times, I don't want to have contact anymore. I cut you off again. So it's a back and forth dance of connection and disconnection. And I think that's probably the most common form that we see.
Tina, can you comment on, does this get worse or do you see more of this when the adult child has a spouse or significant other and how that impacts the relationship with the parent?
The spouse can have a positive, negative, or neutral impact on the estrangement. One thing I hear a lot from parents in my Reconnection Club, which is an online school that I started based on the book, is that their child's spouse is heavily, heavily influencing the child to stay away. And in some cases, that may be true. In other cases, the parent may not be aware of how much the child's own need for distance is actually present. And the spouse is maybe appears to be holding the keys to the door when really they are just given the job of holding the distance. But regardless of what's going on, if you feel like your child's spouse is getting in the way and saying, hey, don't contact your parents, I don't like them, or whatever, they're not good for you, fill in the blank, then it becomes absolutely necessary, especially if there are grandchildren, for you to somehow, and of course this can be extremely difficult, but somehow find the good side of that person and try to find a civilized way of being together. The last thing you want to do is be in conflict with your child's spouse. You don't want your child to have to choose between their spouse and their parents, because parents too often find themselves on the losing end.
How does the path to reconciliation begin for a parent or for an adult child?
The first step to reconciliation is to recognize that reconciliation is required and find compassion for yourself, for finding yourself in this painful, difficult, sometimes excruciating position. Compassion is always the very, very first step, because if you're coming into this project with shame and self-blame and self-recrimination, you're not well-resourced to make repairs, because you're just too overwhelmed and paralyzed by a bunch of feelings that have grabbed you and are in control of your ability to see and understand and take action. So the first step is self-compassion. That's also important, because when you can find compassion for yourself, you naturally find that you feel more compassion also for your child. And that is a good basis for forming a connection, is that mutual compassion. Sort of, I'm okay, you're okay. I'm a good person, you're a good person. That's why that, in my mind, is step one. And then step two is self-examination. And people who are listening to this path of reconciliation may be thinking, well, when do I reach out and what do I say? That's the last thing you want to do. I mean, literally, the final step would be the reaching out. First, you want to do some self-examination and ask yourself, how have I been hurt? How are my emotional wounds? How is my history influencing how I'm experiencing this and how I'm responding to this? The better you understand and love yourself, the more able you will be to really understand and see what's going on and what's required. So after you have found that absolutely unconditional self-compassion, after you have done some really serious but compassionate self-examination and come to understand the situation, and perhaps even looked at different generations of your family, you know, how was my childhood? How did my parents raise me? How did that affect how I raised my kid? There's so many things to look at before you reach out to another person. Because if you start by reaching out, even if, you know, we talk in the club all the time about how to word things and what's the best thing to say, but, you know, words will only get you so far. You've really got to feel the intention behind anything that you write, the intention behind the fact that you're reaching out. So that's why reaching out comes absolutely last, when you have done all of this really rich work of giving yourself what you need and finding yourself in the context of the situation and understanding what's required. Then you reach out from a place of, here's what's required, and I'm able to give it because my bucket is now full instead of empty because I'm feeling despair.
What have you noticed about the success stories you've seen where there has been a reconciliation?
Well, following on from that last question, pretty much what they all have in common, I would say there are two ingredients that they all have in common. The people I hear from when they've managed to reconnect, they have all done substantial personal work, either with a therapist or through just personal introspection, reading, just reflecting, taking their time and focusing on themselves. So personal work is pretty much a part of every success story that I hear from. And I do get emails pretty regularly from people who have read the book, who've been in the club, and they tell me, they usually reflect on what happened and what they think worked for them. And they all talk about the personal, or they all evidence the personal work that was done. The other ingredient that they pretty much all include is some sort of apology. You know, whenever there's a conflict between people, one of the, sometimes the only features that will melt the ice is an apology. And so I talk a lot about apologies as a relationship repair tool, as something that is a gift that you offer. It's not about who was right and who was wrong. It's not about saying, I admit that I'm terrible or that I did wrong. It's about, I have a gift for you. It's about saying, I see you. I see the pain that you're in that caused you to behave the way you did. And I'm so sorry for that. So success stories pretty much always include some sort of apology on top of that personal work that was done. And sometimes it takes substantial personal work to get to a place where you feel like apologizing. Even if you don't believe you ever did anything wrong, if you can get to a place of generosity, of spirit, then an apology is something, when you feel bountiful and gracious, it's just something you can give and it feels great.
And I'm wondering if that also includes forgiveness.
A forgiveness on the side of the person who's getting the apology?
Coming out of the self-reflection part, pre-apology. I wonder if you see that is a part of the process.
Well, I do think forgiveness is not something that we can reach for because we want to forgive. If we've been deeply hurt and we're having trouble and we're struggling, I think forgiveness comes on the other side of a lot of acknowledgement of pain and injury and so forth. In other words, I think that forgiveness is a natural outgrowth of healing. When we truly, truly heal, that's when we naturally forgive. And if we haven't been able to forgive, it's because we haven't truly healed. And I don't believe that I don't think you can force or require someone to forgive who's not able to forgive. But what you can do is you can facilitate healing. And as far as forgiveness, parents need to be able to forgive themselves. I hear a lot of parents who really just seem just sort of pierced by feelings of shame and remorse. And it's awful to see they have not been able to forgive themselves, basically for maybe not being perfect. They have regrets, as of course all parents have regrets. You know, it's easy to find stuff to regret when you've been responsible for the parenting of another human being. But self-forgiveness is as important as self-compassion. And some parents don't even realize that they haven't forgiven themselves. But that's the first thing I would do, is try to forgive yourself if you're feeling like you need to forgive someone else. Start with you.
Appreciate that. And as I was reading your book, the question that came to me is, how can we look at the flip side? What should parents of adult children do, and maybe equally important, not do, to build and keep healthy relationships with their adult children in the first place?
That's such an important question. And when we talk about healthy relationships, one thing that almost automatically comes up is boundaries and respecting boundaries. And some people don't like the concept of boundaries because it feels aggressive or it feels cold. But I think that is a misinterpretation of what boundaries are meant to do. We have fences around our yards, but we also have always a gate in the fence that can be opened and closed. It's not a fence isn't a moat. It's just saying, this is my yard and that is not my yard. And so respecting boundaries is an important thing for parents to do with adult children, but it's also a thing that they need to require of everyone else, including their adult child. And it may seem it's counterintuitive to talk to a parent who's been rejected unwillingly about holding her own boundaries. And yet it's terribly important because many parents feel like doormats, like their child is walking all over them. And that may be a case where there are boundaries that do need to be set. And so boundaries are important on both sides. I need to respect your boundaries to show you that I respect you and that I want to be close to you. And I also need to let you know what my boundaries are so that we can have a healthy connection where nobody feels violated. So respecting boundaries is very important with adult children. And that can be a new thing because, you know, when your children are small, they don't have the same boundaries that adult children do, obviously. They don't have spouses. They don't have houses. They don't have jobs and 4 Facebook pages, I guess, unless they're, maybe 6-year-olds have Facebook pages. Yes. I don't know. But so respecting boundaries is important. And as we talked about before, embracing your in-laws is important. Your in-laws are not going to be people you choose. Even your child doesn't choose his in-laws. He chooses his spouse, but not his in-laws. But the attitude toward people who come into or even around the family, the attitude, the most helpful attitude is, I want to embrace this person. Even if they're not so easy to embrace, so many times an adult child will get together with a girlfriend or a boyfriend and the parents do not like that person. They let it be known and then the child marries that person. And now they've got a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law whom they've been very clear up front they didn't like. And that's a setup for difficulties. So whenever your child or any relative whose relationship you value embraces someone in their lives, the smartest path is to try to embrace that person too, to do your best to make it clear that that person is okay with you. And this is kind of a paradox, but if your child has chosen someone specifically because they know that you will not appreciate this person, then embracing that person will make that backfire. If the child doesn't have you saying, oh, that person is wrong for you, if you're just saying, that's great, honey, have fun, then it is up to the child to make his own decision about this inappropriate person. So in other words, you don't want to be the wall or the bad guy, the heavy, saying that person's not right for you. Just say, cool. Love that person. That's fine. Do what you like. And then let your child do her own work to evaluate that person. It is paradoxical, but you want to embrace that which, instead of, what is this saying? What you resist persists. And so paradoxically, you need to embrace that which you do not want. Reverse psychology is another way of looking at that.
And Governor Mario Cuomo of New York during the pandemic press conferences once did a whole side commentary on his advice to always say that you like the boyfriend.
Yeah.
And although I prefer the Maria Dakotas parody of it, he has come to the same conclusion. And we want to be respectful of your boundaries because you've been so generous with your time with us today. And I'll move to our last question. And that's, Tina, what's one key thing you'd like readers of your book to take away?
I think the most important thing for parents who are reading the book to realize is that they have power in their relationship with their child. Even the parent who feels so powerless, who feels like they can only just wait and sit back and cross their fingers and hope their child changes their mind, even they have power. Just being somebody's parent puts you in a position of having influence in that relationship. They only have one mom and they only have one dad, typically. And so you will always have a different place in their lives than a friend, than a peer, than a sibling. There's no one in the same position as you. And that gives you a particular privilege in their lives, whether they're showing you that or not. So when you feel powerless, and you feel despair, remember that you have more power than you think. And to use it strategically, that is how you may be able to really make changes in that relationship.
Tina, thank you so much. Very helpful information, and really appreciate your perspective and your book as well. We'll include links in the show notes to a number of things you mentioned, but also to your book, Reconnecting with Your Estranged Adult Child. Tina Gilbertson, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Tina.
It's a great conversation with Tina Gilbertson, author of Reconnecting with Your Estranged Adult Child. Dennis, what struck you from the conversation?
Yeah, Joe, I agree. Learned a lot from the conversation today with Tina. A few things from my side. When you asked her what causes relationships with adult children to fracture and become estranged, her response that the adult child needs more space, probably as they get older, and when families are very close to one another, this is a bit of a challenge. And it's a natural development for adult children to need the space. So that's a really good indicator of something we ought to pay attention to. Sometimes, at least this is my perspective, but sometimes families like to keep their children very close to them as opposed to letting them go a little bit and giving them the room to grow. The second thing, when you talked about the different types of estrangement that you see, what I wasn't aware of as much was the emotional versus the physical. And I really appreciate those comments. You can not see somebody physically, but you can also probably do as much damage by not having conversations or emotionally not engaging with them. At least that was the takeaway that I had with this. I think those are key things to be aware of. If you see some of those things happening to yourselves, trying to be sensitive to that. The estrangement doesn't necessarily mean physical. It can also mean emotional. And the third thing that I couldn't get out of my head the entire time, Joe, the song Cats in the Cradle. And I think we all know the Harry Chapin song is one of the best songs that Harry wrote. And the message there was phenomenal in that, you know, as parents, we are role models in a large part for our children. They kind of don't necessarily listen to what we say, but they might do as we do. So spending time with your kids and investing in your kids in a positive way when you engage with them, from my perspective, can help you avoid the cats in the cradle syndrome, you know, lead you to a smoother road where you won't go down this estrangement path. Joe, what about yourself?
Well, great point on cats in the cradle. My only disappointment is that we didn't hear you give a rendition of it on the podcast, because I think that would be interesting.
Well, if we did that, everybody would have stopped listening at that moment.
Yes.
They would have never heard your comments, Joe.
There you go. So there are a number of things that struck me. The first thing was really that there are a lot we can do proactively to build and maintain healthy relationships with adult children from a parent's point of view. And the reality is that things do change a lot as our children become teenagers and then adults. And I thought her commentary and advice on boundaries was very notable in terms of really being able to set them, respect them, also for yourself, not just it's really a two-way street there. And her quote of "a fence isn't a moat" stood out to me. And then the last point is really her comments on self-compassion, that everything, including reconciliation, start with self-reflection, being compassionate for yourself, that opens you up to be more compassionate with others. I thought that was very helpful. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, and we'll connect with you again soon.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.